The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 511, recorded on August 7th, 2018.
Welcome to the 511th edition of TD Gaming Podcast and 344th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
And last week, we actually had a gaming history without actually intending to have one. We went on and on and on about Red Dead Redemption. So who knows, maybe there'll be another gaming history without us actually knowing about it.
Mm-hmm.
So before we get into what you've been playing, one news item popped up, and we're not going to talk about it. And it's not really a news item, but it's, I think, an article that everybody should read. It's on Kotaku right now, and it's called Inside the Culture of Sexism at Riot Games. And I'm going to include a link in the podcast notes. It is a long, eye-opening, and here's the thing. Nothing in the article is really, you know, surprising, because I think a lot of people in the know have known about this, about Riot Games, for a long time. But yeah, it's a really nauseating read about the culture that's in Riot Games. And, you know, I hate to say this, and I hate to blast other gamers, but, you know, it also is a reflection on friggin' MOBAs. There's a reason why I stay far away from League of Legends and even Dota 2 and stuff like that. And you always ask me, why aren't you playing Overwatch? Why aren't you playing, you know, the hero-based shooters? Yeah, I don't want to play those shooters because of the people that are in them. I think the only multiplayer game that I've enjoyed is Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2. And even then, I have to turn off the audio, not because they're the typical audience, but just because I don't want to play with a bunch. I don't want to know that I'm playing with a bunch of 8 to 10 year olds. It makes me feel like I'm playing in the kiddie pool or something.
Didn't you enjoy really your time with Turncast and playing Civ?
Turncast isn't you know, random people selected to play a game. No, it's selected people from the same group. I don't. And there's plenty of women in that too.
That's true.
But the thing is that, you know, I also love playing Halo 5 multiplayer, but usually I mute everybody. So yeah, it's a really interesting read. Like, I'll give you one example of hypocrisy. You know, they accuse women of, you know, being bossy and, you know, being climbers and all that stuff. But when this woman who was up for promotion was passed over by 3 guys, she was told she didn't grab it. Well, if she grabbed it, she'd have been called pushy and bossy and upperly mobile, now wouldn't she?
Isn't upperly mobile the point?
Yeah, but when it's women, it's like, no. We need a fraternity here. We need to be able to do dick jokes in the office. The problem with Riot is that they want people who are real gamers, but when a woman who's been a long time World of Warcraft, she kept on going on and on and on about her experience, and finally said, well, why don't you just look at my World of Warcraft profile? You know, like you didn't believe her. It's a long article. We're not going to get into it. it's depressing. And the thing is that Riot found out about this article a couple of months ago. Here's the thing. This article has been was in the works for like half a year. So they made all these changes, but, you know, according to the article, yeah, they just said they were changing and nothing changed. So it's an interesting read, you know, and it gives you a little brief look into not only Riot, but also just computer engineering itself. I'm not even thinking of software development. I'm thinking of computer engineering. And that 350% of women who will get into the thing just leave, you know, because it's just impossible to deal with. Anyways, like I said, the link's going to be in the notes. I don't want to get too far into this. What have you been playing, TJ?
One sec. I had a cough. Anyways, this last weekend I was at Evo in Las Vegas, over at the Mandalay Bay, and it's the biggest fighting game tournament in the world. So I played a few fighting games.
Did you compete?
I didn't. We only knew that we were going to be there like a week or two before, and it was past registration time. And it cost $60.
You proved to the competitors that you could beat them.
I jumped on some Arc System Works games. I played some Blaze Blue Cross Tag and repped my team. I played some Soul Calibur 6, which I love the character, how the characters feel in that game. It's looking really good. I played a bunch of Taki.
Speaking of sexism, did they make Ivy's boobs even bigger? At some point, like in Soul Calibur 12, she's going to be able to bounce on those things.
I played Taki, and she's kind of just as boobalicious, but...
I always take Safita, because she's the one that I know how to do the special move of. That's when she leaps on someone's shoulders and snaps their neck with her thighs.
Mm-hmm. I also played Dead or Alive 6, which... Okay. That game has been away for 5 years, and it's looking savage. I love the... for those who don't know, like it's been mostly a fan service. Zach is in it. He was in the build I played too, and he's just like they played fan service for years with the DOA Extreme games, but this one is looking pretty fresh and pretty good.
Wait a minute, like, you're saying they didn't do fan service with like Dead or Alive 4 or Dead or Alive 3? Keep in mind, Dead or Alive, the first one. Was the one she had the boob bounce toggle on the was it the Saturn? They had the boob bob, or was it the Dreamcast? They had the boob bounce toggle.
Right, but what I'm getting at is that this game isn't just fan service, like DOA Extreme is.
Oh yeah,
it's actually a good fighting game, or it's shaping up to be.
The sexiest fighter ever was Lucy, the Spartan who managed to somehow get into the game. Oh, there she was in her Spartan armor. You couldn't even tell it was a woman because she was exactly like Master Chief's outfit, except was she a different color? I'm trying to remember. Was she blue? I think she was a different... I don't think she was green. I think she was blue.
Yeah, I don't remember. I wasn't on board for the one with Lucy.
Yeah, but she was the one in which she was a heavy hitter category in that she was slow, but, you know, when she punched you, there goes half your health. So her thing was just to do a bull rush, you know, just run, punch, knee someone in the gut, knock them down with your fist, boom, match over.
Yeah, but this one's shaping up to be pretty good from what I can see. A lot of the originals are returning. I'm hoping to see some cool new characters in there, and it actually feels like a solid fighter. Mm-hmm.
You know, that reminds me of Soul Calibur. You know, I wonder if they're going to have special characters again.
Well, they have.
Having both Darth Vader and Yoda.
So they already have Geralt from Witcher.
Okay.
And there's rumor that there's going to be at least one more guest character before the launch.
You want to bet it's going to be console specific? Like, you had Link on the GameCube, you had Kratos on the PlayStation 1, if I remember correctly.
I don't know anymore.
For the Xbox.
Like, I feel like the time has passed for console exclusives, except for, like,
what
some very...
Really console exclusive? It's more like giving a shout-out to the console that's on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think people on the Xbox were disappointed they didn't get to play as Kratos or Link.
Given the fact that we saw so much SNK like, we saw Geese Howard and other characters like that in Tekken 7. I think I would like to see... If I was going to wish against all wishes for another character, I would go for Haomaru from Samurai Showdown from the SNK roster.
Yeah, Lucy had sort of a grayish armor. But I'm going to tell you something. Fuck Alpha 142. She better not... Alpha 152. She better not fucking come back. I hated that character. Hated it. Hated her. Hated every single green, blobby, bit of her.
And the build I played, there were a bunch of original of the original characters that, and like a couple new ones.
Yeah, just no Alpha 152, please.
Yeah.
I mean, I could beat her, but it was sort of like a sometimes a coin flip.
But yeah, it was a fun weekend. The whole show was really good, and they made some cool announcements of new stuff. I got to talk to a lot of famous players. I actually got to talk to Daigo Umehara, who is considered to be one of the faces of Street Fighter competition in the entire world. Like, that guy was...
I have my blank face right now. I have no idea who that is. He may be famous to you, but I'm like,
He's probably the most popular Guile and Ryu player in the world.
I don't doubt you. It's just like I am so out of that community. You know, I guess I never really played that much Street Fighter. I mean, I saw people playing it in the arcades, but I really never really cared that much about it. I mean, the few fighting games that I did care about were stuff like Soul Calibur and Dead or Alive. I never did play the wrestling. So was there anything else announced? Because I had no idea Dead or Alive 6 was coming.
Yeah, Dead or Alive 6 was announced at E3, and then they had playable builds there, and they had playable builds at Evo.
How did
that at E3? I don't know. It was like just it was early in E3 or just right before it, if I recall correctly.
So one of the things about Dead or Alive 6 is that it's being less sexualized and it's aiming more for esports because that's where the money is right now.
To that, we actually had a chance to talk to the director, and he said the whole roster hasn't been revealed yet. So wait.
Well, they're teasing Hitomi and Li Fang. Well, Hitomi, here's the thing. It's kind of a no-brainer that Hitomi's going to be in it. I mean, that's like saying, oh, is Ryu going to be in Street Fighter? Hitomi's going to be in it. I don't know if she's the face of Dead or Alive 6 or not. Do you think Hitomi is the face? Not Zack. Zack is the goofy clown that's in Dead or Alive, but do you think Hitomi is the face of Dead or Alive?
I would argue that it's... It was the pink-haired ninja.
Oh. Well, I was about to say, you know, actually, now that I think about it, Ryu has... Hayusabosa is probably one of the faces, because one thing, he's an import from a different game. Oh, you mean... No. Do you mean the opera singer?
No, I mean Ayane. And yes, Hayabusa. I think Ayane and Hayabusa are the faces of Dead or Alive.
Every time you have the all the material I've ever seen has been Hitomi, because you know those Japanese schoolgirls.
I'm looking at the covers, and it looks like it's always been like a completely different person.
I'm not thinking of the covers. I'm thinking of promotional materials. She's always the one that they were showing off. Because she's the one in, I think, Dead or Alive 4 that she had the fantasy about becoming a dolphin or a mermaid.
I don't know. I see Ayane and Hayabusa on a lot of Dead or Alive stuff.
What about the kid? You know who's the face of Dead or Alive? The grandpa. didn't he have a kid that he protected? I miss Grandpa.
I don't know. I don't know. I'll admit, I don't know much about Dead or Alive. It was always an Xbox thing, and I didn't really have...
Well, it was an Xbox thing for 2 years. I mean, 2 games, that's it. Dead or Alive 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Dead or Alive 1 and 2, were Dreamcast games, and Dead or Alive 5 was multi-platform.
Yeah. I don't know. I just sort of passed it by.
Oh yeah, Helena was the opera singer.
Mm-hmm.
The opera singer slash assassin.
But one of the big things that came was Sagat is finally in Street Fighter V.
Okay.
Which everybody, I don't know if you remember, but Sagat is the giant kickboxer dude with the eye patch.
Yeah.
He hasn't been in, like, okay, so Sagat has been, like, a major character in Street Fighter V since the very beginning. And a lot of people were like, why the hell is he not here yet? And they finally announced him for Season 3. Everybody was worried because they've done classic characters like Blanka before and messed him up. And Sagat came out to, like, he was announced to be playable the Monday after Evo, which was yesterday. And,
why not at Evo? That's weird.
Because they announced him during, they announced that he was finally going to be playable during the Street Fighter V finals at the end of Evo.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, it was neat. Like, he's back, Tiger Shot, Tiger Punch, all the Tigers. And, I'm excited to play him. I haven't gotten to him just yet, but he's going to be fun.
Just let me know when Injustice 3 is announced. How about you, Scott? What have you been playing?
I've been playing Octopath Traveler. I've collected all the companions. I've done all the Chapter 1s, and now I'm going to proceed on to the Chapter 2s. It certainly makes for a very long game, I think, doing it like this, because I get to see each chapter and what each character's journey is going to be.
TJ, did you complete it?
No, I actually haven't gotten far in that game. I've gotten my third companion, but other than that, I haven't really pushed too hard into it.
I'm enjoying the battle mechanics and the in-town mechanics. You know, where you have utility abilities, and a lot of RPGs like this, especially JRPGs, don't always do this all that much. So you can actually, like I said, you could steal or buy. If you have the thief, you could steal, or if you have the merchant, Tressa, you can buy items. If you have Cyrus, you can, he's kind of like the Sherlock Holmes character, and he can scrutinize someone and feel you their bio, and then you might get a bonus from doing that. And then, of course, there's Ulbrich, the fighter, and then Hatney or something, I forgot her name, the hunter. But she, both of them can challenge people to a fight. And what's cool about the hunter is that I don't think I've seen quite this class before in a JRPG, because she can capture monsters and then use them as a summon later on, as opposed to Rydia, who like will summon learn a summon, she'll have them permanently. Here she kind of collects them for a little bit. She can like carry about 5 or 6 of them, and you have to select which ones you want, and so it's kind of like you're improving a summon attack for, you know, boss battles or whatever later on. So it's kind of unique and different, this class. So I'm having fun with it. It's, you know, been a lot of fun so far.
Cool. I haven't been doing much lately. I've been actually extremely busy, but I just got in Far Cry Tribal from Gamefly, so it's a couple of years late, but I'm gonna check it out. I haven't really started much of it. I've killed 3 goats, and then I had to quit. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see it, because from what I understand, there was a sequence in Far Cry 4 in which you fantasized about being a caveman. And much like in Assassin's Creed 3, where you had a little bit in which you were a pirate, and then the next game was Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, I think that was sort of like a test for this kind of game. So we'll see. The graphics are okay, but then again, you know, it's several years old. So, have either of you played Far Cry Tribal?
No.
I haven't played that one, but I did a lot of coverage on it when it was getting ready to come out and after it launched. It looked interesting, but it, like, I don't know. I always felt like they took that hawk mechanic from Assassin's Creed Origin from Far Cry Primal.
So, anyways, we're going to move on to the next. So now we're going to move on to the news. And guess what? Talking about seasons, Siege's next season, Operation Grim's. Damn it. Rainbow Six Siege's next season, Operation Grim Sky, unveiled. And this comes to us from PC Gamer. The next season of Rainbow Six Siege officially has a name, Operation Grim Sky. Ubisoft shared the first details for the season on Siege blog, reminding players to tune in to the full reveal during the Paris Major from August 17th to 19th. The Paris Major? Is that sort of like one of the competitions for Rainbow Six Siege?
Yes, it is one of the major stepping stones on the way to the world championships.
Okay. While Ubisoft didn't reveal the names of the next two operators, it did share a short description for them and tease their appearance. The two operators have joined Team Rainbow as part of its Urban Tactical Response Team, codenamed Grim Sky. The post describes the British defending operator as, quote-unquote, a tough police officer who is an expert on mob behavior and snatch squad tactics. She knows she belongs on the front line and won't tolerate any nonsense. A brief teaser was revealed about the new American attacking operator, a quote-unquote specialist with a remarkably sharp mind when it comes to tactical operations. He's seen the worst in Kabul. Despite it all, he's fell in love with the city. Legendary for his surgical precision, he remains an enigma within Rainbow Six. It seems the defender is an expert in snatch squad tactics. This refers to a police formation meant to quickly penetrate a crowd of people and apprehend a single target, similar to a kidnapping. The reveal image above her riot control experience may point to her wearing a heavy armor of a one-speed defender. Her gadget appears to be some sort of deployable tool with electricity, but it's hard to tell. The attacker in the Grim Sky image is clearly wielding a blowtorch, so it's safe to confirm that much. Grim Sky will also bring a complete map rework for one of Siege's old classics, Hereford Base. This will rebuild the structure and layout of Siege's cube-shaped base and shift the art style to a World War II theme. A new recoil system that has been testing since last year will also finally be implemented with the hope of bringing the game's aim misalignment issues. More teasers will inevitably be dropped by Ubi in the next week leading up to the final stream live on Twitch, so stay tuned. So, you're our resident Siege expert, TJ.
Snatch squad tactics makes me think of a certain niche that they might not have in Rainbow Six Siege yet, which is being able to maybe booby trap or basically set up the objective in some way, especially in like a hostage map where the opposing force has to get in, get the hostage, and get out.
Or it could be the other way. Do you have multiple hostages? Because I know that when you dealt with hostages Counter-Strike. Sometimes the opposing player would set himself up surrounded by the hostages so that it's sort of like you had to be careful or else you're going to kill a hostage by mistake.
There's only ever one hostage in a Rainbow Six Siege game, but you can do that. You can use the hostage as a human shield because if they kill the hostage, if the attacking team kills the hostage, they lose. So I'm thinking, for snatch squad tactics, I'm thinking this with some sort of electrical device. It may be a way to booby trap the objective, booby trap the hostage in some way, and make it more difficult for a team to take the hostage.
Or maybe it could be sort of like a melee attack, you know, in which you just immobilize the other player.
Maybe. It's going to be interesting because there really is. I don't really think there are ways to like booby trap a room, but there really isn't a way to booby trap the objectives themselves yet. And I think that would be an interesting niche.
So an attacker with a blowtorch. Now, if we were a defender with a blowtorch, I would say, oh, he seals up doors. But here's the thing. For those who don't know, Siege has a lot of destructible environment, and that's a big part of the game. So I'm imagining a blowtorch would have something to do with that.
Hmm. I wonder if he'll be able to cut metal without actually breaking. I wonder if he'll be able to make holes in places that other operatives can't. Like, yeah. you can break holes in wooden walls and like make kill holes to look through and shoot at other players. But there are certain materials that you can't like cut. You can't shoot through. And well, I wonder if with the blowtorch you'll be able to cut through like certain materials that other characters can't.
Well, remember, they have two phrases for him, tactical operations and surgical precision. You know, so it tells me that he's going to be able to set up, yeah, probably kill hole, damn it, I'm really bad right now, but, you know, like kill, you know, like a kill hole, just like mm-hmm. a murder hole, that, you know, in a specific spot where people normally cannot be able to make one.
Right. It's going to be interesting. I hope that these are what these characters are, because they are two niches that haven't been filled yet.
So tell us about Hereford Base, because it's one of the original maps they said they're reworking.
I don't know, because it sounds like something from an earlier Rainbow Six game that they might be reworking for Rainbow Six. Wait, which one?
Hereford Base.
I can't remember that one.
It's a huge base, and the thing is that they're bringing in a World War II theme, which is interesting.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. I'm trying to think of all the base of all the levels that I've been through in that game, and I don't remember that in the original layout. That's why I was thinking it had to be something from an earlier Rainbow Six game.
Anyways, we're going to move. Well, here's the thing. You've been playing a lot of fighting games lately. Do you still have time for Siege?
I do. I make time for it once in a while, and especially when the new stuff comes out.
Okay. So, yeah, are you looking forward to the new season, is the question.
Yeah, I've been watching the esports scene a lot, and I really like what people are doing with the characters. It's fun to watch. It's fun to see what new metas people are coming up with, because they keep releasing new operatives, and there's all sorts of different things that each operative can do, so there's a lot of different teams out there in a lot of different styles.
And we have to remember, this is a game that when it was launched was pilloried. And it just, you know, bowled its way through. It just said, yeah, here's the problems with the game, let's fix it.
Mm-hmm. And they took what was kind of a broken game at the beginning and turned it, and they've really nailed it down to a pretty good competitive experience.
Yeah. I mean, Ubisoft was desperate to have an esports game, and they said, we're going to make Siege our esports game. And, you know, I wish more developers would do, publishers would do this. You know, Ubisoft was motivated, but suppose another game that might not be motivated, you know, in which they, you know, which it's like not quite what they want. You say, screw it, just keep working on it. We'll get it right eventually. I mean, that's what Microsoft apparently was doing with Crackdown 3, because Crackdown 3 was finished like 2 years ago, and Microsoft looking and said, no, this isn't fun. Start over, guys.
Yeah, I think that it's amazing to see how far it's come. I mean, I've been there since the beginning. I like watching the esports scene grow. I've seen a lot of those guys, like on the developer side and on the professional player side, just like so much growth out of every angle of this game, and it's really cool to see it continue to grow and continue to get its accolades.
Yeah, folks, you weren't there, but the look on TJ's face when I introduced him to the lead developer, and he told him that he had been with the game, what's it called, since day one, and the developer was sort of shocked at that.
Mm-hmm. My next big one was during the announcement of Rainbow Six Siege's new player count during E3. I actually got a retweet from community manager Justin Kruger, and that was really neat.
Cool.
I wish those guys the best. I hope the game continues to grow.
You know, I just wish for something like a Rainbow Six Vegas 3 for crying out loud. I mean, it's time for a single player game again.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people agree. It's just Ubisoft is going to keep going with this while the iron is hot. And
well, it's making money for them. Use some of that money to to make right. a Rainbow Six game.
And I wonder if like so much of the team is on Rainbow Six Siege that they just don't have the manpower to move to focus on a single player right now.
Hmm. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. The World Ends With You for Switch gets release date. This is from IGN. The World Ends With You Final Remix will arrive on Nintendo Switch on October 12th, Nintendo announced today. Originally released on DS just over 10 years ago, The World Ends With You Switch re-release was announced in January. Final Remix with Switch features a new high-definition visuals and additional content and gameplay options that weren't in the 2008 original. Taking full advantage of the Switch, Final Remix will allow players to use either touchscreen or Joy-Cons as control options. Additionally, Final Remix includes a new two-player co-op mode. The re-release title is referenced both to iOS and Android version dubbed Solo Remix, and to the fact that the Switch version features remixed music. The musical changes are particularly important since The World Ends With You features rhythmic battles that Nintendo and publisher developer Square Enix hope will mesh well with the new Switch control options. Yeah, I like using the Pro Controller. Anything.
Yeah, I know, I was about to say, wait, you're only the touchscreen and the Joy-Cons? What about the Pro Controller?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. The World Ends With You, I heard no end of good things from most people, but, you know, some other people were, But I know that The World Ends With You was pretty popular back in, well, I can't say back in the day, because 2008 was not that long ago.
It's only 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was a really neat game. It was sort of struck me as sort of an off persona, but with, like, almost a Kingdom Hearts style. And it's more coherent than both, so I like the game. It's really fun, and I'm happy to see it get new life on the Switch.
Yeah, I mean, if people who want something that's not Chrono Cross, go with The World Ends With You.
For sure. Have either of you played it?
No, I know about it, but I haven't played it. Actually, you know, put down and stood in front of a DS and play it. But I know everything about it.
I'm looking at the trailer for it, and the style is kind of reminding me of that spray paint game on the Dreamcast where you're roller skating and spray painting across the city. Yeah, I'm looking at it and I'm getting that kind of vibe. They look like that. I don't know why. They look like a bunch of punks, I guess.
It's funny because it also takes place in Shibuya too. I mean, if you remember the first level that you're in when you play Jet Set Grind Radio or Jet Set Radio Future, you're in Shibuya. But here's the thing. For those who don't know, it's an urban fantasy game in which it takes place actually in the modern setting of Japan. And it actually, everything goes around. See, every day goes on. You have one area that's called the real ground, while the dead live in an alternate plane of existence called the underground. And the entire thing about... Here's the thing. The thing that people loved about The World Ends With You was basically the story and the setting and the interactions between the real world and the underground world. And it's sort of like... It has that feel of Majora's... Was it Majora's Mask that had dealt with the time thing?
Yes, it did.
Okay, so The World Ends With You basically has the same feel. It's not the same, but I'm just saying it has that same... It's a JRPG that doesn't feel like a JRPG. I'll just leave it like that.
And that's what I'm talking about with, like, sort of... It's built on similar styles as the Nintendo DS game Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories, but it has a very distinctly sort of persona, urban-esque, you know, you're in the modern day, but there's, like, these fantastical things going on. And I think that's what always appealed to me about it, is that it's like if the whimsical world of Kingdom Hearts was set to a persona theme, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it may not be different, but it feels different. It feels very different, even if it's not... And by the way, the people who did The World Ends With You are also responsible for the Kingdom Hearts series, just so you know.
Mm-hmm. And, like... It's really neat. It was sort of one of those just like out of nowhere games that you either played it and loved it or you just didn't know about it. So
I know some people who played it and weren't really that big a fan of it. But, you know, here's the thing. Even if you think it's adequate, it's different. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those games that you really, if you don't play, I just watch the YouTube videos for it. But, you know. Let me put it this way. This is a game that you can spend the money on for the Switch and not feel like you'll have any sort of tinge of buyer's remorse. It's like you can play something different. This is different. You want to play a JRPG that doesn't feel like an JRPG? This is it.
For sure.
So, anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
IGN pulls review and fires writer for plagiarism. From Kotaku. The gaming site IGN has removed a review for the game Dead Cells after allegations surfaced yesterday that the review's writer had plagiarized from a small YouTube channel. IGN then let go of Mewson,
writing a... you know, there should be his first name there, but it really doesn't matter.
Writing in a statement that it plans to re-review Dead Cells. Quote, "We apologize to our readers, developer Motion Twin, and especially the YouTuber known under Boomstick Gaming for failing to uphold these standards," the outlet said. Boomstick Gaming's video went viral last night, skyrocketing to the top of Reddit and other forums. The similarities between the two reviews were too numerous to be coincidental, and many observers saw the incident as a massive outlet taking advantage of a smaller one. Before this, Boomstick Gaming had around 11,000 subscribers on YouTube. IGN has over 10 million. Quote, "No hate, man, but I wish I was cited, collaborated with, or and or compensated in some way for the healthy views your site saw in your Dead Cells review," Boomstick Gaming wrote to Mewson on Twitter this morning. Mewson has not commented publicly.
You know, I don't feel bad for Boomstick Gaming. They just won the lottery. I mean, here's the thing. IGN doesn't give a shit, you know. It wasn't IGN. It's a massive outlet taking advantage. No. It was a writer. It was a single writer who was late on his deadline and lazily decided, you know, I'm going to do this small site and I'm going to rip it off and no one's going to notice because it's a small site. It only has 11,000 subscribers. Yeah, Boomstick Gaming just got the jackpot. They're going to get so much money from the YouTube hits alone, and now they have. Probably I don't even need to check to see their subscribers. I'm pretty sure it increased tenfold, at least. So they now have an audience, and they have the sympathy. So it's like, yeah, I would have been ecstatic if this happened to me. Actually, it did happen to me. But unfortunately, here's the thing: when I was writing for GamePen, someone from a smaller site literally copied my review, and I don't remember the game, and just posted it on the site. And it was a professional site, but it was a smaller site than GamePen. GamePen was a small site.
I checked their video channel, and yeah, they've doubled their subscribers, over doubled it. Yeah, they're almost to 30,000 now.
Yeah, because like I said, ka-ching! This is the best thing that they got noticed. They got noticed. They got someone to so. I don't feel bad for IGN. I don't feel good for IGN. I don't care about IGN. And, you know, Boomstick Gaming, whether a good site or not, just got a windfall from this. And IGN, here's the problem for IGN. Now they have all this baggage that they're going to have to deal with because of one writer who was late on their deadline.
Yeah, and it's common sense. I mean, like, don't plagiarize. That's stupid. That's rookie stupid stuff. And the worst thing is that, like, yeah, you're right. It doesn't really – I don't feel bad for IGN. I don't feel bad for Boomstick because they got theirs out of this. But it sucks for the rest of us because it doesn't – because it's – there's already a group of people out there that thinks that journalists are lying schmucks and assholes. So
yeah. That's they don't think the same way they do because they have an opinion that's different than yours.
So when one guy, even if it's just one guy, goes out and fucking lifts work from a smaller site, it makes the rest of us look like assholes, and it just validates these people's hateful opinions about gaming journalism. So thanks.
I don't think he's going to be finding a job for any site anytime soon. Because here's that we're talking about toxic. That was toxic for IGN. Like mm-hmm. I said, you know, they can fire him if they want, but that stain is still going to be there, whether they want it or not.
Yeah, it makes all of our jobs harder, and it's annoying, to say the least. Like it isn't confined to IGN. It makes all of our jobs harder. Don't do shit like that.
And you know, if you're gonna rip somebody off, at least use different language. Go get a thesaurus, damn it. Get a thesaurus. Don't use the same friggin' words. I mean, if you read what he posted, all the bullet points were almost the same. He added a few words, but he kept the same words. You know, if you're gonna rip someone off, at least have the good taste to just get a thesaurus and find your own words. That's you know, if you don't have a grasp of the English language, then maybe you shouldn't be reviewing.
Right. I mean, I've been close to a deadline. I couldn't get through an entire game. I didn't go and rip somebody off, but I definitely went and looked at some videos to see if I could fill in the blanks that I didn't know about yet.
Or just go to GameFAQs and read the ending.
Well, that's doing your research.
Right. I don't want to post something if I don't know everything I need to know about it, and I don't have necessarily all the time in the world to play it. Mm-hmm. I try my best, but I do realize that there are other people doing this, and I go and I look at what they've done, and I see what I can learn from what they have. I don't copy them, because that's stupid. I'm not a fool, but I will. But you can research and look at other people's work without straight up lifting their words and thoughts.
Like I said, if you're going to rip someone off, at least be smarter about it. If you're going to cheat, don't get caught.
Or just don't cheat. Do the research and then write it in your own words.
Or just, you know, I've learned how to bullshit my way through a game that I thought was terrible, and I didn't really feel like I wanted to review it and I didn't want to play the entire thing because it was like, this is a waste of time. So just bullshit your way through, and if anybody catches you, well, throw your hands up. I've done that in like 2 games in which it was like, yeah, you know what, this isn't worth it. I'm just going to write the review. They're not, you know, the publisher's not going to like it because it's a negative review. But I don't rip anybody off. I just bullshit my way, and I know how to bullshit my way while still being able to be truthful. You know, it's not like I make up shit about the game. Oh, like that review that was on Eurogamer, the Black Desert Online, remember? They had this 2 out of 10 review for this MMO, and the MMO people said, this person only played like an hour on our game.
Hmm.
I mean, it's not even like Jim Sterling, who gave Hellblade 1 out of 9 because he ran into one of the only catastrophic bug. And he didn't even bother to call up Ninja Theory and ask about it. Just flew off on a handle and just... And then, here's the thing. If you ever have to make apology videos, and you keep on having to make apology videos, maybe you should start re-examining your style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've never had to make an apology video.
And speaking of reviews, did you get my review for the 20XX?
Yes, I did. It's on its way to being published.
Excellent.
The biggest part was letting the person who sent the game see the review. Mm. Because they're the ones who care most. You know, what are you doing? I mean, I have to rewrite my Vampire the Masquerade review because they said that the published version is a little different than the version that they sent me. Not that it's going to change much. I gotta say about Vampire, they brought back Vampire the Masquerade, and it brought back all the people, the things that people love, the Malkavians and the Gangrel and all the. Here's the thing about that RPG. The first 34 pages are nothing but color text, photos of letters and all that stuff. Because I'm gonna tell you something. People who play Vampire the Masquerade games, or the Vampire the Masquerade, or Vampire the Requiem, etc., they care more about the setting than about the rules. Fuck the rules. We just want to play vampires and we want to make a good story. They are the most role-playing of all the RPGs that I know.
Yeah, because the rules are made to be very... easy and just
it's not
intuitive.
That they're easy, it's just more like people want to do it's almost LARPing when they play.
There's no tables of Thaco and skill sets and
oh, there
all
are.
Sort of crap.
I'm just saying, here's the thing. AD&D, you have a lot of rules Nazis, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In Vampire the Masquerade, it's sort of like the worst rule that you can break is breaking out a character. Is mm-hmm. doing something that your character would not do. Because the one thing that really annoys me when you're playing Dungeons & Dragons is people are so scared of low scores. And I'm, yes. No, low scores are the best. Say I play a guy with a 3 charisma. God damn it, I'm going to play like the most boorish prick who alienates everybody because I have a fucking 3 charisma. That's a bonus for me.
Mm-hmm.
Or a 5 wisdom, you know. Playing someone with a 17 intelligence, 5 wisdom. People don't know the difference between intelligence and wisdom in an RPG. I can tell you. Intelligence tells you it's raining. Wisdom tells you to get out of the rain.
Mm-hmm.
So when you play someone who has a 17 intelligence and a 5 wisdom, you're basically Lisa Simpson. It's like, you know, there's a reason why people say you're too smart for your own good. Or playing, here's the thing. If I play someone who has a 5 strength, a 17 intelligence, a 12 wisdom, a 6 constitution, and a 3 charisma, that means I'm playing a wizard who's in his ivory tower, who doesn't know how to deal with people, who's weak because he doesn't really do much exercise, you know? So he's basically a smart guy who's not used to dealing with other people. You know, it's role-playing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want 18-18-18-18-18-18. That's boring. That's a munchkin. If you want to know where munchkins come from, that's where it basically comes from. It comes from, I have a Vorpal Sword plus 10.
And don't forget triple class.
Or quintuple class.
Yeah, good lord.
TJ, it sounds like you're about to say something.
I was just going to say, I agree with you. The best part of any of those games on paper or on desk or in the virtual world is fighting against your limitations and overcoming things with other people.
Unfortunately, you can't do that in a computer game.
That's true. But
I mean, the best ones actually, let me correct myself, the best ones do take advantage of that. Like, when you're playing the original Fallout games, if you had a 3 intelligence, some of your dialogue was hilarious. Like, one of your dialogue might be,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's one of the funnest things about those games is, like, having limitations that keep you away from certain parts of the game, and so you have to come back later with a different spec'd character and play it a different way. I think that's my favorite part of Fallout New Vegas. And it's definitely my favorite part of a lot of other different games as well. Like, I mean, Scott, you know, even in Octopath Traveler, like, I don't know if you realize, but, like, you can't open chests, but I can because I'm playing the thief.
Right. I collected them, and yeah, you're right. Everybody has their own little skill set, so that it unlocks certain aspects of the game or gives you more ability and act, what's it called, player active, you know, to do stuff. I think it's fun.
In fact, mm-hmm. If you play Mass Effect Omega, the DLC, there's one part of the game in which you're going to struggle, but if you're an engineer class, he says, it might be hard for grunts, but wave my hand, it's fixed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that small little things like that that say, yeah, we know what you did, and guess what? You're going to be rewarded or penalized for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Grand Theft Auto V still going strong after 5 years, and this comes to us from Business Insider. Last month, like every month before it, Grand Theft Auto V was in the top 20 list of best-selling video games in the United States. It appeared in third place, below Mario, Tennis Aces, and God of War, and above The Crew 2, a trio of games that came out in 2018. Grand Theft Auto didn't come out in 2018, though. It came out in September of 2013. Next month, GTA V turns 5. For most games, that amount of time would make it a distant memory. Instead, in a twist befitting a game centered on heists, Grand Theft Auto V is the verge of crossing 100 million units sold. Grand Theft Auto V has made somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 billion, according to one report. Now, let me say that again. Grand Theft Auto V has made somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 billion. The NPD Group, which tracks video game sales in the United States, offered another incredible statistic. Since GTA V went on sale in September of 2013, it has appeared in the top 20 best-selling games list 57 out of 58 times. So 57 months out of 58, it was in the top 20. The only time it didn't appear was October 2014 when it hit number 21, according to the NPD Group. No other title comes anywhere near close. Its performance is just otherworldly. When pressed on details regarding GTA Online, player numbers, Strauss Zelnick, who is the boss of Take-Two, deflected, saying, "We don't really give out that kind of information. The closest he would get is saying it has a huge audience." Rockstar Games said in January that GTA Online had more players in December 2017 than any other previous time. When asked on Monday, Rockstar representatives declined to offer an update. One thing is clear. The number of players is significant enough for Rockstar to continue producing massive new expansions for GTA Online. The latest update, After Hours, is far from the last, Zelnick said. There's plenty more content to come. From the sound of it, 100 million units sold is just the latest milestone for Grand Theft Auto V. I'm not one of those people, by the way. I still have not purchased Grand Theft Auto V. And by the way, it's still $60.
Jeez. Yeah. Did you know that Grand Theft Auto, by this point, is the most profitable franchise of all time, even over Star Wars and other things like that?
Now, you could probably already tell there was a lot
over
cut
Final
out of the
Fantasy?
Article.
Over Final Fantasy, over Star Wars, over Lord of the Rings, it is the most profitable franchise in any sort of entertainment of all time.
I'd have to look that up. But I'm going to say, the article mentions that Rockstar has to deal with games like Minecraft, you know, and others that are, you know, which are easier to do updates for because while they are, you know, they are complex games, they're nowhere near as complex as an open world game. And they still have to somehow capture people's attention, and that's probably the hardest part.
Yeah, capture and keep their attention.
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, it makes me think that when Red Dead Redemption 2 finally comes, they're going to have so much content for that for like months upon months to come. And on the other hand, it makes me worried that once I'm done with the vanilla game, Red Dead Redemption 2 Online is just going to be a nightmare hellscape of microtransactions. And
I don't know, because here's the thing. You're talking about Take-Two, which probably saw what Grand Theft Auto Online is doing, and just say, do more of that. You know, don't fuck up the formula.
I hope you're right. I hope it's not, like, ridiculously microtransaction-y where, like, I mean, some of the stuff in Grand Theft Auto 5 is worth absurd amounts of real-world money to get your hands on. Like, between time and putting effort into, like, the in-game currency, it's ridiculous.
So, I want to give you a little... Here's the thing that you have to understand. In 2013, Assassin's Creed 4 came out. Right? So, the games that came out, that the game came out with Grand Theft Auto 5. Since then, you've had Assassin's Creed Rogue, Assassin's Creed Unity, Assassin's Creed Syndicate, Assassin's Creed Origins, and this year you're going to have Assassin's Creed Odyssey. That's not including the other games like Chronicles China and Chronicles India and Chronicles Russia. So since Grand Theft Auto 5 came out 5 years ago, there's been 5 Assassin's Creed games. You know what other game came out the same year? Battlefield 4.
Quality over quantity.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, just the games that came out in 2013, you say, oh yeah, that's right, they seem ancient. Like, you know what game came out after? Dark Souls 2 was released in 2014. That seems like a lot. Dragon Age Inquisition came out in 2014.
Yeah.
Did Rockstar release any games after Grand Theft Auto V? I can't think of any.
Nope.
I think
they've just been updating Grand Theft Auto Online.
The money machine.
Since...
yeah. The money machine.
Yeah. Turns out when your game prints money, that you don't need to work too hard. that's not fair. They're making Red Dead Redemption 2, I guess.
Yeah,
that's true. That took a lot. So they probably spent a lot of time on that game then, you know, just developing it, doing all the bug stuff. So hopefully, when it releases, it won't have bugs like some other games that get released.
You know, Rockstar North has been working on Agent for very long. I think that was canceled at some point because they renewed the trademarks, but they're still working on it. They're, like, last year they leaked images of it. It's just weird.
Hmm.
But I think it's not even Rockstar who actually developed it. Rockstar North developed it. So, and to answer your questions, no, they haven't. They haven't done anything but they're an entire division though, so I guess it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the last, Grand Theft Auto was here's the games that they released since becoming. Well, here's the thing, they were actually DMA Design first, and if you don't know who DMA Design was, they did a lot of games for Psygnosis, like Shadow of the Beast and Lemmings. And all the Lemmings games, actually. And then they released a little game called Grand Theft Auto, which is a top-down shooter.
Yeah.
Top-down car game. And they also, and they became Rockstar North and released after doing... They did Grand Theft Auto 3 as DMA Design for Rockstar Games, and then it became Rockstar North. And then they released Vice City, Manhunt, San Andreas... Liberty City Stories, Vice City Stories, Grand Theft Auto 4, Lost in the Dam, Chinatown Wars, The Ballad of Gay Tony, episodes from Liberty City. They also did Red Dead Redemption, so they're not doing Red Dead Redemption 2.
Sure.
And Rockstar San Diego, I think, is doing it? Anyways. So yeah, I haven't played Grand Theft Auto 5 yet, so I guess I'm one of the only people on Earth who actually is a avid gamer who hasn't played it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I was so turned off by Grand Theft Auto 4.
Grand Theft Auto 5 was a big step in the right direction after 4, and it was one of the games that me and Samantha played all the way through from beginning to end.
Same here. My wife.
It was really... interesting, and because of the three characters, it's sort of each of the three characters went out of their way to appeal to the what I would say is the three types of Grand Theft Auto player.
You got, I'm pretty just sure, like, I'm going to be attracted to the psychotic guy.
Yeah, because that's all about like causing mayhem and going
the
on killing
spree guy. Yes.
I'll never forget the one night when I was doing the online stock trading. So I go to Michael and I start his little stock trade. I have him buy his stocks or whatever that he's doing. Then I go to Franklin and I have him buy his stocks. And both of them are chilling at home, just watching TV, whatever. And then I go to freaking Trevor and he has his goddamn gang coming after him because he pissed them off. So now he's, he has a chance of dying. And it's like, oh my God, dude. So I'm sitting there battling to save his life to make sure he doesn't die because I don't want him to go to the hospital and lose all the money that he's holding. So I have to get him to run away. It's like, my God, this guy.
Man. Yeah. Yeah. So Trevor is like the rampage killing spree type of Grand Theft Auto player. Michael is just more of like business and being a gangster, a legitimate gangster. And Franklin is all about the driving.
He's San Andreas.
Which one?
San Andreas.
Oh, I mean, like a lot of his stuff is heavy on driving, and it's a good place to just like get deep into like the automotive customization of the game.
Mm-hmm. All I remember from San Andreas is driving and riving. If I wasn't bicycling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, driving is a big part of the game series,
well,
the franchise.
Grand Theft Auto, I guess it was.
Right.
So yeah, but it's sort of like after 5 years. Video game becomes old, mm-hmm. quote unquote old. 5 years is a console cycle these days.
Mm-hmm. It is. And one wonders if they're even going to bother making a Grand Theft Auto 6, or if they'll just keep updating Grand Theft Auto Online into eternity.
They are making an Elder Scrolls 6,
That's not Take-Two.
I know, but they...
Yeah, you're right.
That's happened.
Magic can happen.
And they're making a gimped Fallout 76. By the way, there was a news item that Scott wanted to bring up that we don't have time for, so... And just that it's not going to be on Steam. It's going to be only on the online store for Bethesda.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much just it. And I think a lot of people, or at least some people, are disappointed at that. You know, they don't want to. I think they like having all their games in one place, and having to go to Bethesda's website might deter them from wanting to get the game.
The answer is just get the console version.
Yeah.
Screw you, PC gaming master race. Yeah, there's only one store for PlayStation. There's only one store for Microsoft. There's only one store for Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, before we go, I also been doing a little bit of internet archive, you know, internet Wayback Machine stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it'd be interesting if I posted my review of Half-Life Blue Shift, which was I posted it on June 22nd, 2001.
Ooh.
And I'm going to say something. Back during the period I was going for GamePen, I actually cared about video games. I actually was enthusiastic about the industry, and I wasn't burned out like I am today. So I actually had a lot of enthusiasm when I wrote my reviews. So I posted the link, and you guys can read it from there. No illustrations, okay. But it's just the text. So you can get to see how enthusiastic I was about this industry before it took a mallet to my brain and just pounded it over and over and over again.
Back when there was still a sparkle in Jonah's eyes.
Yeah, back when I gave a shit about video games. Or PC gaming, because Half-Life Blue Shift was only on PC. It never was released on console.
So I was right. Your inner child did die. Okay.
Oh, what?
Your inner child, I guess your enthusiasm and
youth. Well, here's the thing. There are certain games that actually wake up my inner child.
Well, that's good.
You know, but in general, fuck them. Fuck them all. Fuck the industry.
I do have something.
Rusty dildo.
Calm. I do have something before we close that, too. I will be at QuakeCon this upcoming weekend in Dallas.
Intended to do that. I mean, I get the invites to be a media member for that, but that and BlizzCon.
So, with any luck, I know that they're going to be doing something. I know that there's rumors that they're announcing something new for Fallout 76. They're probably going to announce some new stuff for Quake Champions and the new Doom.
I'm going to tell you something. I'm willing to bet you're going to be playing a lot of Rage 2 there.
I've been hearing that there's going to be something new about Rage 2. There is a big possibility that I might be able to interview with Mr. Pete Hines and
Pete. I know Pete. We've chatted a few times.
And the other one, the Skyrim guy. What's his name?
The other one.
Something Howard.
Todd Howard.
Come on, man.
I know. I tried.
You have to know these names, damn it. If Michael Pachter walks up to you, don't say, "Oh, Michael, I forgot your last name."
Or just say to Todd Howard, "Oh, it's you, the other guy."
It's you, other guy.
Skyrim guy.
I remember when Todd Howard was pissed off that I said in my review of Morrowind that it really chugged on my computer and that it requires a high system requirements. Dude, don't be pissed off when I say the truth. It requires high system requirements, damn it. At the time, it was just a monster to try and run.
I'm not going to mention you when I forget Todd Howard's name, or else he'll be super mad with me. But with any luck, I'll have plenty of cool things to talk about, and maybe even an article or two to push over to Jonah for next week's show.
Really? You don't write for any sites anymore? What?
Of course I do.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm saying, is that I'll be able to maybe push a couple of those articles from those sites.
Oh, I see. You want me to talk about them from, what was the site? Game Watcher?
No, not that one.
Really?
Twin Galaxies.
Oh, that piece of shit. Oh, okay.
Oh, man.
Oh.
I didn't realize.
When he says he didn't give a fuck, no, he doesn't give a fuck.
I have no opinion about Twin Galaxies. The inmates are no longer running the asylum over there.
Right. It's us running the asylum, and we're making the asylum a funner, cleaner place.
Unlike the actual asylum, we're making stupid mockbusters. Let's go watch Transmorphers.
But no, we're good. We're doing good work over there, and I'll probably have some stuff to send over next week. It'll be fun.
Yeah. You know what? I'm still trying to find my Deus Ex review, because I consider that my best review, along with No One Lives Forever, and I can't find it anywhere. It's just... By the way, I was the one who designed the Game of the Year buttons for all the games. So if you ever look at the Deus Ex Game of the Year edition box, that game pen button there for the game, that was me. I knew how to shill game pen. Well, not shill it, but I knew how to promote game pen like nothing else. And it's gone because Yu-Gi-Oh! Folded.
Mm.
Did reviews for Yu-Gi-Oh! too, but I did reviews for Star Trek 3 and Star Trek 4. The DVDs, yeah. Not the movies. And I think I was the first person to actually start saying, who actually wrote a review saying, you know, Star Trek 3 is actually pretty good. And here's why. By the way, on my Blue Shift, who knew that Barney would become such a thing?
Yeah.
Because that was the debut of Barney Calhoun. As a matter of fact, I'm going to give you a little quote from my review here. In fact, you're the security guard that Gordon Freeman first saw in Half-Life, pounding on the door early in the famous, infamous tram ride. You're referred to as only B. Calhoun, although you could probably guess what the B stands for. So, yeah, give my review a look, and now I'm excited to hear, because, like I said, I've never gone to QuakeCon, I've never gone to BlizzCon either. And I have friends at Blizzard. I wonder where they do BlizzCon, because Blizzard is actually nearby. It's just outside of L.A. Anyway.
Yeah.
Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
I am at Alpha Shark.
And we will see you next week, hopefully not as embarrassing, Lily.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Play games, have fun, take care, y'all.
Don't get mugged at QuakeCon.
I'll try not to. No promises.
And remember, his name is Todd Howard.
Yeah, Todd Rogers, whatever, got it.
Yeah, Pete Hines is the only one you have to really worry about. Good old Pete. You know, I don't know if I regret not seeing the Bethesda show this year at E3 or not. I don't think I would have enjoyed it.
It was a good one.
Well, you weren't there to get me a mug.
Yeah, that's true.
For those of you who don't know, last year I had to leave Bethesda's show early, and I told TJ, listen, TJ, if you can, get me a mug. Because those things, there was a line for them, I think.
Yeah, I still have my glassware from 2017. That was fun.
Yeah, I still do, too. As a matter of fact, I use my mug as my pen holder.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't drink out of it that much, but, you know, it's getting a lot of use.
Good.